So do you have a favorite letter? Do you have a favorite letter? You know, maybe like the letter B. You know, B is in blueberry or Barry Bostwick or balderdash, you know, B. And if you were holding the letter B in your hand, what would you have in your eye? Well, beauty, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The beholder. Gosh, I loved that one. What does it mean to behold something? It means to see it, to observe it, to have eyes on it. It means that when you look at something, especially if you're reading a sentence, it's as if that sentence is saying, look, 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 pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me. This is what you need to see. This is where your eyes need to be. In a sense, when we see the word behold in a sentence, it's pointing us to something that can change our point of view, and changing our point of view can actually change our lives. We begin a new series for the month of August, and the title of our series is called Good Point. And it's going to be a series where we look at the word behold in the Bible. Now, the word behold in the Bible is in there 1,134 times. We won't be looking at every single one of those, all right? We're just going to pick five of those for the sake of time. And we're going to be looking at five of those from the New Testament, and we'll be walking straight through the New Testament, book by book, picking up on five of those that are spread throughout the New Testament. The word behold in the messages in the weeks ahead is not going to be like, behold. You know, it's not going to be this big, dazzling word. It's going to be a word usually that's in a sentence that, in fact, we could almost miss. But we don't want to miss it, because these beholds are pointing us in a direction. They are helping us with a point of view that, again, can make a change in our lives. The title of today's message is called Here is the Measure, and we begin with Luke chapter 7, verse 31. Jesus is teaching, and he says this: To what then shall I compare the people of this generation, and what are they like? You know, titles applied to generations have been going on since the early 1900s. There's the lost generation, there's the greatest generation, the silent generation, the baby boomers, generation X, millennials, generation Z, generation Alpha. There's all types of titles over the generations. So which generation are you in? What's your generation? And how would you describe your generation? If you had to write an excerpt, a page on Wikipedia, or if you were to do a documentary with Ken Burns, what would you say about your generation? What would you compare your generation to? Jesus was comparing the generation of his time. And what did he compare them to? Verse 32, they are like children who sit in the marketplace. Imagine a celebrity news anchor walking up to Jesus, you know, a CNN anchor, that's Capernaum News Network, and they walk up to Jesus and they're like, hey, what would you compare this generation to? And Jesus, without hesitation, says, well, this generation, they are like children. Now, being compared to children can be a good thing, right? I mean, we see in the scriptures this picture of Jesus holding a child and then turning to his disciples. And he said this, Matthew 18:3, truly I say to you, unless you change and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So Jesus says the only people that will make it into the kingdom of heaven are people with childlike faith in him. People who love and trust God first and most. People who love others in the same way that they love themselves, and people that forgive others because God has forgiven them. A childlike faith is what Jesus points to. If you are trusting in religious rules, if you're trusting in cultural Christianity, we would plead with you to hear these words from Jesus. It is a childlike faith that is the entrance to the kingdom of heaven. And because that's the promise of God, that means that it's good when you're compared to a child, right? So it's definitely a good thing that you would be compared to a child. They are like children. But there's also a negative way to be compared to a child, right? I mean, when a spouse is talking to another spouse and they say, you know what, you're just like a child. They aren't talking about entering heaven, all right? That's a completely different conversation they're having. So, which one is Jesus talking about? Is Jesus talking about a humble, childlike faith kind of child? Or is he talking about more like a rude, selfish brat kind of child? Well, he explains, verse 32. They are like children who sit in the marketplace and call to one another and say, we played the flute for you and you did not dance. We sang a song of mourning and you did not weep. This is interesting language. It's not normal for how we think and talk, but picture it this way. Picture that there is a huge open market area, almost like a food court in a mall, so to speak. And in the middle, there's a large fountain. And then all around the edges are vendor booths. There's little merchants. They're mostly like lean-to tents with some baskets and some tables. And families are there in the marketplace, and they're doing their shopping. And the marketplace area is safe enough that the children, the younger children, they can go out to the middle over where the fountain is, and they can play games together in the fountain. And over by the fountain, there's a man who's just sitting on a bench, and he's watching all of this that's transpiring. So the kids get together, and they're like, okay, what kind of game are we going to play? And finally somebody says, okay, let's just play wedding. Yeah, I mean, that sounds strange to us. Remember, though, this is ancient times. You know, they didn't have smartphones that they could sit on the fountain and just play with. So, you know, wedding undoubtedly was a popular game. And the kids, you know, lined up. You know, there was a bride, there was a groom. They picked bridesmaids and groomsmen. And then there was somebody playing the kazoo for the music. And, you know, and so it was just a fun little upbeat time. They have a great little time of playing wedding. Everybody's having a great time. But the whole time they're playing wedding, there's a group of kids over by the fountain that wouldn't play. They didn't like the upbeat music. They didn't like the fun of the wedding. And they're just sitting over there just pouting and kicking the dirt. And after a while, little Mary Jane, she likes for everybody to be included, and she sees the pouty kids over there kicking in the dirt. She's like, no, I want them to play too. She goes, all right, that's enough wedding. Let's play something else. And somebody says, okay, well, let's play funeral. I mean, bless their hearts, you know. I mean, their choices were wedding and funeral for games. Their choice of food was baked fish and baked fish. So, you know, they didn't have a whole lot of choices that they had to play from. But you know, they decided to play funeral. And so they put everybody in place, and there was a little choir, and the choir were supposed to sing songs. And so they began to play funeral. And that same little group of kids standing over by the fountain, well, they don't want to play funeral either. They don't like that game. They don't like the solemn music. And so they're just kind of sitting over there pouting, kicking in the dirt. And after a while, the man sitting on the bench, he turns to the kids that were pouting and kicking in the dirt. And he goes, you know, he goes, your friends, they've invited you to play. You know, they tried to play one game and you didn't like that. They tried to play another game, you didn't like that. You know, I mean, really, they're really trying to include you, and you're kind of just acting like selfish brats. Now, here's the picture. That's not just a scene according to our text. It's almost as if Jesus is the man on the bench. And he's not turning to some pouty kids that won't play a game. He's not turning to a celebrity news anchor. He's actually turning to church people. He's turning to the pastor. He's turning to the elders. He's turning to the deacons. He's turning to the church staff, the church members. And he's saying, you know, you guys are kind of acting like selfish brats. It's blunt language. But why does Jesus say that? Well, he explains. Verse 33. For John the Baptist has come, neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say he has a demon. Now, John the Baptist, he wasn't normal. He's a little out there. He didn't dress like everybody else. He didn't act like everybody else. He was like a hermit out in the wilderness. And he went out in the wilderness, and where he was, he would just, out in the wilderness, just start preaching the gospel. And here's the weird thing. People would go listen to him. People were getting saved. People were getting baptized. There was something about the message of John's sermons that was resonating. They went out to listen. His preaching was powerful. Even people from the church would go out and they would listen to him. But John wasn't a good politician. He didn't shake hands. He didn't take pictures with people's babies. He wasn't good at the people stuff. He didn't care if you had money. He didn't care if you were important in the community or important in the church. He was focused on the gospel. He desired to live a holy, devoted, separated life from the normal routine of what everybody else did. He just wanted to preach the gospel, and God used his preaching. But nobody would hire John to be their pastor. Nobody wanted that guy to be in charge. In fact, after a few months of going out to hear John's preaching, the church people kind of got tired of the fact that John wasn't shaking hands and kissing babies and taking pictures, that he wasn't talking about the important people of the community or talking about the important people of the church in his announcements. They didn't like it, so what they started doing is around town and at the gym and on social media and everywhere else, they just started telling people, hey, you know what? You don't need to listen to John. John, man, he's got a demon. He's radical. He's crazy. He's not like us. And yet, John was God's messenger. But John, he played the funeral game. And the church people, they didn't like the funeral game. So they pouted and they talked bad about John. And John wasn't the only person that they talked bad about. Look at verse 34. Jesus continues, "The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, 'Behold, a gluttonous man and a heavy drinker, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.'" So there's our word there, behold. So it's there. It's saying, look, 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 here's a point. Here's something that you need to pay attention to. It's there. It's designed as a word to direct us to something that would change our point of view and hopefully even change our lives. And what is this behold here for? Well, Jesus includes it in this sentence, maybe as a way to make sure we don't miss him. To make sure that we don't get the wrong idea about him, but we actually fix our eyes on the true Jesus. Jesus was a little different than John. He didn't wear crazy clothes. He didn't do a lot of crazy things. He was somewhat normal, maybe out in the culture, in the community, a little more normal than John at least. And Jesus, he would shake hands. He'd take pictures with you, baby. You know, he was good. He was social. He was good at talking with people. He knew how to fellowship with all kinds of people. He knew how to fellowship with people on Sundays and Sundays after church. And he knew how to fellowship with people on Friday nights that weren't in church. In fact, he knew how to socialize with people who were banned from the Sunday services, so to speak. That's true. The churches actually had bylaws where sinners could not come and attend their services. Jesus, on the other hand, wasn't creating bylaws against sinners. He actually was a friend to sinners. Throughout the New Testament, we see Jesus was a friend to tax collectors, to criminals, to prostitutes, to people with real medical diseases, to people with social diseases. Jesus was a friend. And just like John, Jesus did preach the gospel, but he had a different angle. People went out to hear John preach, but Jesus went out to people. They would go out to the wilderness to hear these powerful messages from John, but Jesus actually went to the people with the message of the gospel, and he would go anywhere they were. Jesus would go to the marketplace. He'd go to the leper colonies. He'd go to the wealthy neighborhoods. He'd go to the poor neighborhoods. Jesus would go anywhere people were. He ministered in a practical way that made sure that people knew that the gospel was for everybody, every where? The church people, not so much. They didn't exactly agree with Jesus making the gospel available to everybody, everywhere. So, after a while, in the marketplace and at the gym and on social media and other places, they started saying, hey, look, you shouldn't listen to Jesus. Jesus, he goes to meals that are not sponsored by the church. Jesus, he's a glutton. He's a drunk. He's friends with sinners. Jesus is too radical. He is just not like us. Jesus was God's messenger. Jesus was and is God's son. Jesus was and is the Messiah. But Jesus played the wedding game. And people didn't like the wedding game. So they pouted and they talked bad about Jesus. They were ignoring the message and spending all of their energy criticizing the messengers. Alexander McLaren said this, if the message is unwelcome, nothing that the messenger can say or do will be right. Now, granted, Jesus is directly speaking to religious people here, but let me just make a comparison here with this thought. Let me read it again. If the message is unwelcome, nothing that the messenger can say or do will be right. That can be true for religious people and people in the church, but it can also be very true for non-religious people and people outside of the church. We live in a time and a culture that's not different than any other time in any other culture. It's just this is when we're alive. So it feels like that what we're experiencing has never been experienced before. It has. There is nothing new under the sun, as Solomon said. Is it different because it's AI instead of whatever it was in 300 BC? Yeah, it's different. But it's still the same. The heart of a person is still the same. That heart was created to worship and enjoy God. But the heart of a sinful person will worship self and worship whatever it is they want. So if the message is unwelcome, it doesn't matter what the messenger says or does. It won't be right. So if you're a religious church person and you're not hearing or seeing or enjoying what you want to enjoy, you may not listen to the message because the message is not your priority. It's whatever is being delivered with the message, the way it's being delivered. And the same is true for someone who's not religious. They would say, well, I don't want to hear your message because you don't vote like I vote. You don't wear the same kind of clothes that I wear, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So whether you're talking about within the church, tradition or contemporary aspects, whether you're talking about music or dress or style of building, or whether you're talking outside of the church, people have nothing to do with God. If the message is unwelcome, nothing that the messenger can say or do will be right. This is again pointing to the heart, which is what Jesus was always pointing to. The heart, the heart, the heart. No matter who you vote for, they will not always do what you want. That's not even possible. But we've become a culture that's not different than other cultures throughout history, but this is when we live, and we're a culture that says, this is what I want. If you don't give it to me, you're out. Aren't we thankful that Jesus did not have that attitude toward us? John was God's man for the job. Jesus was really God's man for the job. They didn't like how John did things. They didn't like how Jesus did things. And Jesus turns to them and he says, you know, you guys are acting like selfish brats. You don't like anything unless it's exactly what you want. And even when you get what you want, you still will pout and kick the dirt. How does Jesus end the conversation? Verse 35. And yet, wisdom is vindicated by all her children. Some of you may have heard me share the story before about my late friend, Janet Hoggard. It's been probably about 25 years ago now. We were sitting in the Mayflower restaurant in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. And my then 4-year-old and 2-year-old, the only kids we had at the time, were sitting there with us at the restaurant. It was a little senior adult seafood buffet thing. And we were all just kind of sitting there talking. And Janet turned to me and she said, in her sweet southern accent, "Dal, your children are so well behaved." To which I said, "Janet, you should see them at home." And Janet said immediately, she said, "But that's the point. See, you train them at home. It's not supposed to be perfect at home. And then when they go out, they take what they've been trained with and they go live that out." I'll never forget that conversation. It makes so much sense, and it's a pretty good picture of what's happening in this moment as Jesus is teaching. He turns to the selfish religious folks, and he says, "Look, you're acting like children." And he says, "Let me give you the truest measure of life." The truest measure of life. Listen, if you want me to talk about Carolina and Clemson at your funeral, I'm really sorry. If you want me to talk about your job or what a great golfer or hunter or fisher or shopper or gardener or whatever it is that you did in life, and that's all you really want said at your funeral, I'm really, really sorry. Because that is not the ultimate measure of a person. The ultimate measure of a person is, has God rescued and redeemed them? Have they been set free? And if that is true, your funeral will be a tremendous worship service. It will be a time of great joy, because at your funeral, you will never be more alive. That was the joy of being able to speak at both of my parents' funerals, was being able to say their life here was great and they loved Clemson and they worked hard in the yard and the grass was perfect and they were great parents. But the greatest measure, the most important thing of their life was that they actually, not perfectly, but behaved like children of God. See, that's what Jesus is saying. He says the greatest measure is that God's true children are known by their behavior. Now, are we always going to get it perfect? No, not at all. But are we in the ballpark? Or do we kick the dirt and pout way too much? This is an incredible sentence from Jesus, and yet wisdom is vindicated by all her children, because it's part rebuke and it's part hope. The rebuke is clear. The rebuke is, hey, you're rejecting me. You're rejecting John. You're rejecting the gospel. Don't reject. That's not good. When Calvin came back, one of the first things he said to me when we were talking the other day, it really just struck a chord with me. He said, I didn't realize until I'm in this place that has great history of churches. Because I was in this place, and this is what he said, and correct me if I'm wrong, he said, it just felt so dark. Like they really did not have any of the light of the gospel. Jesus is saying, do not live in darkness. Don't reject the message. So there's a rebuke. Insane, and yet wisdom is vindicated by all her children. He's looking at the pouters and going, hey, the proof is in the pudding. We see your heart by your actions. But then there's also hope, and here's the hope. He's not talking to everybody. That's fantastic. He's not talking to everybody. As Calvin shared, it wasn't until almost the last person that he talked to that he actually got somewhere. So Jesus isn't talking about everybody. You see, here's the thing. There were some people, they believed. They went out and listened to John, and they believed. And they listened to Jesus and watched Jesus, and they believed. They didn't reject. They didn't listen to the gossip of the church. They didn't listen to the gossip of the atheists and the agnostics. They didn't listen to the lies that were spread about religion or politics or government or individual people. They didn't listen. They didn't reject John. They didn't reject Jesus. In fact, they didn't kick and they didn't pout. They believed, don't miss the second part, and they followed. It's easy to believe, but the following, that's where the joy comes from. They believed and they followed. They discovered what it meant to truly be free. They discovered what it meant to truly be satisfied. And that's why when Jesus throws that behold in there, behold, this is what you're saying about the Son of Man. Look, look, this is what you're saying, but it's not true. As always, it's Jesus' way of saying, please look at the mercy of God. Look at his message of hope. So, pouter or praiser? Belligerent or believer? Faker or follower? Child of greed or child of God? Which one are you?